20. As the trial reached its climax, I realized I was at the back of a long queue of people who were seeking honest answers from Erin Patterson. And so many questions had begun when she walked back into Leongatha Hospital at 9:48 a.m. on Monday, the 31st of July. Nurse Miriam Sespin had let Erin in and was leading her across the waiting room when Dr. Chris Webster appeared at the triage window. He was relieved to see Erin, but he also wasted no time firing questions. No small talk now. Had anyone else eaten what she had served for lunch? Erin said her kids had the leftovers on Sunday night, although she stressed that she had scraped off all the mushrooms and that they had not eaten the pastry either, just the meat. Before the doctor could dig deeper, his mobile cut into the conversation. It was the cops who'd been sent out to Erin's house. "There's no one here." "No, she's with us," replied Chris. But he wasn't going to waste an opportunity either. If they were still at Erin's house, could they collect any remains of the beef Wellington meals from the garbage bin and bring them to the hospital? Sure. They just needed the code to get through the gate. Chris put Erin on. She gave them the code and told them where to find the bin with the remains. She was very helpful, totally open. Those remains would be the pastry and the mushrooms from the beef Wellington that the kids had eaten on Sunday night, which the police found in exactly the spot where Erin had said they would find them. While the police were bringing back those remains, Chris renewed his chat with Erin. It would be their final conversation. His shift was about to end, and he had handed over on-call duties to Veronica Foote. But he wanted to make sure that Erin's kids got to a medical facility as soon as possible. Erin didn't understand why. They had not eaten the mushrooms. Chris insisted. They might still have ingested toxins. But why was it necessary? They didn't have any symptoms. You don't want to wait for them to develop symptoms and then get worse, countered Chris. According to Nurse Merrim, Erin started to become visibly upset. She was worried that her kids would become panicked or scared. Chris, having been given the runaround by Erin all morning, did not mince his words. In the witness box, he had a very clear memory of their final exchange. "I said they can be scared and alive or dead." He had given it to her straight. "Who is this woman?" seemed to be the subtext. As Chris left, Erin needed to visit the toilet. She had come in complaining of ongoing diarrhea and nausea, and she was damn well about to prove it. She had 3 bowel motions in reasonably rapid succession at 10 a.m., 10:04 a.m., and 10:06 a.m. Each of these was caught and noted by Merriam as clear liquid. The first was medium output, the next 2 were small, with small solid bits of brown, which is all consistent with someone who has been suffering from diarrhea for a day or two. Merriam also took the usual obs. Erin's blood pressure was 130 over 100, and her heart rate was down from when Kylie Ashton had taken it earlier, but it was still elevated. Now, temperature. Over at Dandenong Hospital, Simon's brother Matthew had tag-teamed with his sister Anna. Anna had spent all night with their mother Gail, and Matthew was sitting with Gail when a nurse came in and asked whether Matthew wanted to see his father in ICU. She was gently suggesting it was probably a good idea. Don would soon be on his way to the Austin. In ICU, Don was conscious but far from well. The good news was that he had been started on silibinin, as had Gail. Monash Health had found supplies in the nick of time, and there would be enough for Ian and Heather when they arrived too. But would it be too little, too late? Toxicology Registrar Dr. Mark Douglas was already in the ward when Matthew arrived, and he was asking Don questions about the mushrooms on the beef Wellington. Where were they from? Did he know? Don didn't have a clue. So Matthew offered to call Erin to sort it out, and he and Erin spoke briefly at 10:23 a.m. The call barely lasted a minute. Matthew cut to the chase. "Where did you get the mushies?" She mentioned that there were fresh mushrooms from Woolies, recalled Matthew, and some dried mushrooms from a Chinese grocer or supermarket in the Oakley area. Sarah Linthal was the prosecutor leading Matthew through his evidence. Was Erin specific about it being in the Oakley area? It was more a general, sort of vague, broad answer rather than a specific one, replied Matthew. Looking back over the chronology of the evidence, I think this was the first time Erin had ever mentioned dried mushrooms from an Asian grocer. It would be far from the last, but I think this was the first. 10 minutes later, Erin was giving the same answer to Dr. Veronica Foote, who was now completing a full history and assessment. She told me she purchased some mushrooms from Woolworths in Leongatha and some dried mushrooms from a Chinese grocer in Melbourne in April, Veronica told us from the witness box. Veronica had also conducted a point-of-care blood test on Erin. That test proved reassuring. Erin had no electrolyte disturbances and no metabolic acidosis. Some results were consistent with diarrhea, raised hemoglobin and low potassium, but on the other hand, there was no elevation in the urea to creatinine ratio, which indicated no dehydration and there was no indication of any liver damage. But Erin was still experiencing diarrhea, so no one thought she was out of the woods just yet. Veronica, however, like Chris before her, was still insisting to Erin that the kids had to be tested, and Erin finally decided that if that was essential, she wanted to discharge herself so she could pick them up personally. Alarmed, Veronica immediately called the Austin and sought advice from toxicology registrar Dr. Connor McDermott. Connor was already up to speed on the whole event. Dandenong had sent over Don and Gail's records, and he was expecting Don to arrive within the hour. Connor came straight to the point regarding Erin's self-proposed discharge. In the name of public safety, no. Get her on NAC as fast as you can, he told Veronica, and then transfer her to a higher tier hospital and put her on the phone to me, please, now. Erin had barely put Veronica's phone to her ear when Connor hit her with the same question she'd already answered. Where did the mushrooms come from? He got the same answer. Fresh ones from Woolies and dried ones from a Chinese grocer in Oakley. Not enough information, he declared. What Chinese grocer in Oakley? Connor knew that if death cap mushrooms had really found their way into a commercial supply line, they could be facing a disaster. Erin couldn't remember which grocer. She was sorry if she couldn't be more help, but don't hang up, said Connor. Stay there. He was already Googling Chinese grocers in Oakley. Meanwhile, Veronica was taking possession of the remains of the Wellington from Erin's bin that the police had delivered to the hospital. Dr. Laura Muldoon at Monash Medical Centre had asked for a photo of these remains, and Veronica was happy to oblige. While this was going on, Don was being sedated and intubated for his transfer to the Austin. As his hospital bed headed out of the emergency department and into the ambulance bay, it crossed paths with Ian's coming in. Ian had a bag by his mouth and was vomiting almost continuously. He barely noticed Don, whose intubation meant he was already in an induced coma. It would be the last time the two men breathed the same air. At the Austin, Connor was surprised to see how many Asian grocers there were in Oakley. Wow, but Erin just kept saying she had no idea which one it was. She'd bought the mushrooms way back in April during the school holidays when she and the kids had stayed at Mount Waverley. Undeterred, Connor started naming all the shops on the list that Google had thrown up. Erin stopped him. There was no point. She wouldn't remember the name, even if he said it. The name hadn't meant anything, and it might have been in Glen Waverley. Not Oakley? Maybe not. She couldn't remember. The call ended with mutual frustration. Just then, Veronica came back and told Erin that Monash Medical Centre would take the kids as well as Erin, so Erin reluctantly called Simon to ask him to pick up the kids. It was all becoming a bit manic. Erin's call with Simon was relatively brief. He was happy to pick up the kids. That was okay. Done. Now Nurse Cindy Munro had been asked by Merrim to cannulate Erin so she could begin a course of NAC before heading to Monash, and Erin was expressing her displeasure. "We were just having a conversation as I'm cannulating," Cindy told us in court. And Erin was sort of stressed because she didn't want any of this. She didn't understand why she was having the IV fluids. She didn't understand the medication that was going to be given. She didn't want any interventions. Erin even became quite teary. She was still worried about her children. "And," Cindy finished, "that was when she said, I don't want the children involved in this. I don't want to stress them out." Interesting turn of phrase, no? "I don't want the children involved in this." At Monash Medical Centre, Dr. Laura Muldoon was looking at the photo of the Beef Wellington remains that Veronica had emailed through. Laura had immediately forwarded it to Dr. Camille Trong, a mycology specialist at the Royal Botanic Gardens, Victoria, and Camille had examined the photo straight away. It was a photo of pastry and a mushroom mixture, the mixture that was scraped off the eye fillet steak that Jack and Bronte had eaten on Sunday night, less than 18 hours earlier. Camille was quick to say that she would need the actual remains to make a finding, but she doubted they could be death cap mushrooms because it wasn't the season for mushrooms, and death caps only occur in the wild. They have to be foraged. They can't be cultivated. You can't buy them in a shop. It was all becoming quite a Rubik's Cube. Meanwhile, the ambulance had arrived at Leongatha Hospital to ferry a resentfully cannulated Erin to Monash Medical Centre, and Veronica had also given paramedic Elaine Spencer a Ziploc bag containing the remains of the Wellington found in Erin's bin. That was for Dr. Muldoon at Monash. The trip from Leongatha to Monash Medical Centre in Clayton in Melbourne's southeast took an hour and a half. During that time, Erin complained of nausea, occasionally, and abdominal cramping, but she never needed to go to the toilet. "She was alert and oriented to our presence," recalled Elaine. "She had good skin colour and she was in no respiratory distress. She was also able to transfer onto the ambulance stretcher unassisted." The diarrhea had apparently abated. Erin did complain of a headache at one point, sure, but Elaine gave her fentanyl, which worked fine. Erin didn't seem unduly uncomfortable. During the drive, Elaine and Erin also chatted about the lunch that had caused all this kerfuffle, and one of the questions that Elaine asked was, "Go on, have a guess." "Yep. Where did Erin get the mushrooms from?" "Woolies and an Asian grocer in Melbourne," said Erin. No particular suburbs were mentioned here, just the greater Melbourne area. Elaine also told us that Erin was curious about liver toxicity and what might happen to someone's liver if they'd ingested death cap mushrooms. "Yeah, she wanted to know about liver damage, liver toxicity, those kinds of things," confirmed Elaine at the trial. But throughout the whole transport, she was calm and chatty. Well, that sounded nice. In contrast, just before calm and chatty Erin arrived at Monash, Don arrived at the Austin in Heidelberg. He was in a coma and already critically ill, with a massive liver injury and severe liver failure. His blood clotting measurements were grossly abnormal, and he had a build-up of acid and ammonia in his blood. Dr. Stephen Warrilow, an associate professor and director of intensive care at the Austin, led the team of specialists in charge of Don. He was extremely worried from the outset. His team began a range of aggressive treatments aimed at interrupting the recycling of ammonite toxins that make this poison so deadly. The liver to bile to blood back to liver loop kills more of the liver each time the toxins return there, and breaking that loop is incredibly difficult. Sometimes multi-dose activated charcoal can help, and Don was quickly given that as well. At Dandenong, Ian's condition was also worsening, and on advice from the Austin, he received the same treatment. Because he was still conscious, they asked him to take it orally. At around 2:30 in the afternoon, barely able to lift his head off the pillow, Ian Wilkinson sipped from a cup of activated charcoal. It was the last thing he would remember for nearly 3 weeks. At the Austin, while Dr. Warrilow was leading a team of specialists caring for Don, Dr. Connor McDermott hit the phone again. He'd seen how bad Don was, and he'd heard that Gail was in roughly the same shape, and that she would also be with them very soon. Ian and Heather, he assumed, would not be far behind. But could there be more cases out there? What was behind all this? It was a scary thought. And all he had was a list of Asian grocers as long as his arm. What were they dealing with? Clearly, this needed a serious response before it got out of control. He called the Victorian Department of Health and was given a series of very polite automated options, as per the standard way that big organisations triage phone calls these days. I've got a bone to pick with that, but I probably shouldn't. Not yet. I'll make a note. Anyway, Connor had to leave an urgent message that he hoped would be heard by a human being in the relatively near future. He ended the call in quiet frustration, just as, across town, Erin's ambulance was pulling up at the Monash Medical Centre, and as she was being wheeled in on a trolley, she saw Simon, Jack and Bronte, who had just arrived. That was cool. They could at least all be together. While Erin and the kids were being admitted to the Monash Medical Centre, Sally Ann Atkinson, the senior public health advisor for the Communicable Disease Prevention and Control Team at Victoria's Department of Health, received an email that contained a transcription of Connor's verbal phone message. She sat up immediately. When a message about a suspected outbreak of Amanita poisoning comes from the toxicology registrar at the Austin, you return the call. Most of their conversation covered the standard rundown. It had been a family lunch, 5 people at the table, beef Wellingtons. Okay. So there were mushrooms in the beef Wellingtons? Yeah. Where from? Connor explained that some of the mushrooms in the mixture had been purchased from an Asian grocer in April 2023 and that they were dried mushrooms. He also told Sally Ann that, as far as he knew, they had been bought at either Oakley or Mount Waverley. Connor gave Erin's phone number to Sally Ann. Before Sally Ann called Erin, however, she needed a plan. She notified the Food Safety Unit in the Department of Health and established a problem assessment group to discuss and decide on a proper response to the situation. This group would draw on people from several units in the Department of Health and convene at 9 a.m. the next morning. Back at the Monash Medical Centre, Dr. Laura Muldoon had been given the Ziploc bag. It held the remains of the beef Wellington that the police had recovered from the bin in Gibson Street, and she put it straight in an express taxi to reach Dr. Trong at the Royal Botanic Gardens as quickly as possible. At around 3 p.m, Laura began assessing and examining Jack and Bronte, neither of whom showed any symptoms of poisoning at all. They were in perfect health, enjoying a day off school. The kids and Erin had been admitted to separate rooms in separate wings, but they were only a few minutes apart. The kids had spent a lot of the afternoon in Erin's room. This was fun. A little after 4 p.m, Laura made her way to Erin's room. Erin sighed. It was going to be another examination and more questions. This was becoming tedious. She was guessing it would be the same questions she had answered a dozen times before. Yes, she cooked the meal. They'd all eaten it. She had started feeling unwell in the evening. Then she had developed nausea and diarrhea throughout Saturday night, which became worse on Sunday, blah, blah, blah. It would be the same history Erin had told to Kylie, Veronica, Chris, Elaine Spencer, everybody. Laura began as predicted. What were the ingredients that Erin had used for the meal? She reported eye fillet steak, mushrooms, garlic, puff pastry, green beans and potatoes, said Laura as she gave evidence. And following that, Laura had continued with the same question that Aaron had already answered umpteen times that day. Where did the mushrooms come from? Well, Woolies, said Laura, telling us Aaron's reply, and she also used dried, dehydrated mushrooms, possibly shiitake or puccini, from a Chinese grocery store in Oakley or possibly Glen Waverley. And did Aaron have any original packaging from those mushrooms? No, she didn't. Up until then, Aaron had just been answering the same questions that she had been asked again and again all day by everybody. But because Laura Muldoon had been talking to Camille Trong at the Royal Botanic Gardens, she had one more question. It was a question Aaron hadn't been asked yet, and during the trial, it didn't seem to be given any special weight. Yes, it was a small moment. Nothing huge. For me, however, it was critical. I wanted Aaron to be innocent. I really did. I wanted her to show me that. If I was looking at innocent Aaron, I was looking at a woman who had been shocked by what had happened. There was no intention behind this tragedy at all. So what if she had bought dried mushrooms from an Asian grocer somewhere? She probably had, and even feeding the leftovers to her kids may have been simply a mind snap. But she was now being hammered by everyone in a desperate attempt to figure out how this had happened. And she wanted to figure that out too, didn't she? She loved Don and Gail, didn't she? Surely she would help everyone work out what the hell had happened. If this was innocent Aaron at this moment, how would she answer Laura's next question? Which was, did you use any foraged mushrooms? It was the first time Aaron had ever been asked that question. She had been casually foraging around Gippsland and her own backyard for 3 years. She'd bought a dehydrator to preserve the mushrooms she'd foraged. She'd told her online friends all about it. None of that was a secret. It should have been such an easy question to answer.